Chapter 3. The two instructors ended their meeting shortly after, with all staff room windows intact, which was saying a lot considering how excited Yamada was. Toshinori was sure his last message got through, even if the energetic radio hero was particularly hung up on getting a selfie before they parted ways. It was, as Aizawa would say, just Mike being Mike. And Toshinori finally felt like he understood. Sense of time sharply fractured by an entire childhood condensed into an afternoon, Toshinori felt as though he were entering another universe as he stepped outside, staring around as the rest of the student body filtered back onto the green. Gathering himself, the veteran hero stowed his paperwork in his oversized jacket and hurried home with the wind whipping his coat around his spindly legs. The wet gray of the sky promised a late spring storm, and the tension in the warm air was palpable, mirroring the heady pressure saturating his chest. Toshinori's mind raced as he tried to assimilate everything he had just learned, especially everything he'd completely failed to consider about Aizawa and his journey to becoming a hero. Of course, everyone who wore the hero mantle faced their own difficulties, or else they didn't hold up to the field. But this kind of struggle? Toshinori shook his head, reflecting morosely on his own privilege. Not everyone could coast on physical powers. And yet, not only was Aizawa usually the smartest, most capable man in the room, his body was chiseled, mercilessly lean, and flexible. It was certainly a work of art. And time. Dedication, rigor, maybe with a dash of hopelessness. Or fury. The pull of the two sides of Aizawa's character was stunning. On the one hand, the victory of admission and a successful pro-hero career, and on the other, the logic he used to cool the near loss, knowing he would have been thrown out with the bathwater had one or two things gone differently. It must have felt like the world could be swept out from underneath his feet at any moment, like someone could come to inform him, more than 10 years later, that the entry exam was incorrectly judged and he had to rescind his hero license. It explained the pain and conflict he felt, looking at Shinso Hitoshi and the boy's intense desire to become a hero. Perhaps it felt like being confronted with an alternate version of himself, one who had one less thing to give and was completely knocked out of the running, crushed. So crushed, in fact, that Shinso had a plan B and was currently living it day to day. Any rationalization of their respective situations would amount to little more than chance or fate, and chance didn't seem like much of a thing to build a life on for such a strict, rational soul. More so, to see the young man's unflinching passion to be a hero, combined with a quirk so problematic and easily misunderstood, he couldn't imagine what it must have done to Aizawa, now that he saw the haunting similarities between the two. As he clattered up the stairs to his apartment, Toshinori spared a thought to what he was actually going to say when he saw his co-teacher again. Rather, when Aizawa allowed him to speak to him again. He winced. The whole thing was rather sticky, and he wasn't entirely sure he should have gone to Yamada about such a sensitive subject, no matter how enlightening the conversation was. Had he broached a boundary that would further distance the private man? He knew he would have to find a balance between apologizing for his brashness and perhaps tacitly avoiding present Mike's role in leaking such secrets. But he wasn't anywhere near a solution when he and Aizawa met again, which was the moment Toshinori opened his apartment door. The landscape of his darkened sitting room was different. Cluttered, and the veteran hero's instincts sparked, hand tightening on the door handle. His bones crackled with All for One for just a moment, white and slicing, before he recognized the motley head of hair and long body a dozen feet away. Aizawa was sprawled on his couch, arms slung over the side and fingertips barely grazing the top of a beer can. Power draining from his long form in a rush, Toshinori promptly dropped the files he was holding. "Shut the door," came the gravelly command, It's bright. When he'd given the other man his apartment entry code under the coy pretense of Aizawa picking up some papers he'd forgotten, this is not how Toshinori expected it to play out. Aizawa-kun, he stuttered, stunned. There were beer cans literally everywhere, glinting dully in the light from the hallway. The entire apartment was dark. The younger hero had clearly been there several hours. It was Friday. But what about homeroom? Class was canceled, Aizawa murmured, as if reading his mind. He breathed in and out shakily, movements glacial and uncoordinated in the dark. Cat-like, he stretched his back and reached out a socked foot. I never realized there was a liquor store a block from here. We should do this again. That was all Toshinori needed to know. Aizawa was drunk as hell, and there was no we. Anxiety erupted in Toshinori's tight chest, but quickly dulled into simple sadness and exhaustion. What a mess he'd made. All the more bitter for his thoughtless conviction that he was doing the right, heroic thing. The older hero briefly spared a thought towards Himawari, whose dinner was coming up, then remembered that Aizawa had immediately splurged on one of those timed auto-feeder machines for his furry princess. She would be fine. Lonely, but fine. Out of excuses, Toshinori shrugged off his coat and tried to straighten out his back, as his brain teased through solutions to the drunken lump on his couch. Aizawa was in such a state that he couldn't even consider calling him a cab, not unless he could tip the driver into carrying him inside and tucking him in, then locking up after. Buying time, Toshinori set about cleaning up, silently grabbing the economy-sized cans one by one and dumping them into the sink for later recycling. There were too many. Aizawa was not a small man, but the older hero's mind still staggered at the thought of how much liquor he could take and still be capable of speech. Then he returned and sat on the coffee table next to the couch, keeping a kind of grim vigil until the younger man opened a bloodshot eye. Oh, glad you're alive. Aizawa just grunted and tried to roll over on the narrow new couch. He arched and wiggled until his arm bent back behind his head at a painful angle, face hidden in the back cushions. Toshinori smiled, thin and tense, because there wasn't much else to do. He pulled his tie free from his neck, exhaustion cascading through his body. I don't think you were going anywhere tonight, my friend. Do you want to sleep in my bed? Toshinori, of course, would take the couch. They'd slept together once, on Aizawa's own couch, and that could have been medically defined as a coma. Toshinori didn't want this kind of sequel to that, above and beyond the general politeness protocol for avoiding confusing and alarming morning-after situations. No, he definitely didn't want Aizawa waking up next to him after a blackout, especially after they hadn't spoken for days. Aizawa didn't move or respond in any way, so Toshinori asked again. There was no answer. He waited long enough, then rose to his feet with a sigh. Picking Aizawa up wasn't easy. He'd spent about 10 minutes too long as All Might that day, handling a villain attack nearby, and the man's lean, flexible body was infuriatingly noodly. But after a bit of straining and maneuvering, he got his arms under Aizawa's back and knees. Toshinori carried him to his bedroom, puffing softly with every step. Right as he was about to set him down on the covers of his medically necessary Western-style bed, Aizawa's wide, bloodshot eyes opened, and he leered up at him with a ghastly smile. Are you trying to take advantage of me? His arms gave out, and Aizawa bounced soundlessly onto the bed, Toshinori flinging himself back from the frightening sight with a hand over his heart. Oh my! What in the world? I'm not that drunk. I'm never that drunk, Aizawa muttered, sounding irritated to be dropped, or maybe just to be alive. The trick to highly intelligent people, however, was that they tended to rationalize their irrational states to maintain the illusion of control. No matter how precise his speech, the UA instructor was horribly drunk, and he certainly had control issues, but that went without saying. Looking at his boneless sprawl, Toshinori half considered draining the cans in the sink and joining Aizawa in his stupor. It had been a long day, a long week, honestly, since his co-teacher and friend had started pushing him away. Careful and quiet, Toshinori sat himself on the edge of the bed and pulled out his phone, thinking to text Yamada-san to update him on his friend's condition. But maybe because he wouldn't remember it, Toshinori gingerly pulled Aizawa's hair from his sticky face, running his fingers through the dark, tangled mess. Oh, Aizawa. His heart throbbed, raw. If you want to ask me anything invasive and inappropriate, now's the time, Aizawa muttered thickly from his sprawl on the duvet, head lolling to the side. Toshinori's lips pressed together hard. The disdain in the younger hero's slurred voice was palpable, but he just kept gently, methodically brushing his fingers over the damp forehead. He got as far as pulling present Mike's number from the faculty shortlist before he put the phone down, wondering if he could possibly make this situation any worse with a few questions. "What was school like for you?" he asked as gently as he could. Aizawa shrugged, torso jolting comically on the mattress, then laughed, short and sharp, showing teeth. Then he punched straight up into the air, nearly giving Toshinori a black eye. "Plus ultra." Others may have laughed, but it just nauseated Toshinori. To be certain, it would be him who withdrew from this encounter before Aizawa. His empathy for the other man's younger days was too strong, racking his thrice-stapled insides, whereas Aizawa had a nice liquor buffer surrounding his heart. So he pulled through Aizawa's hair, intently, and waited, maybe trying to soothe him into sleep and silence. "I made it, at least," the younger hero said after a moment, looking off into nothing. "I got the chance." Toshinori winced. "This school isn't everything." "We choose what everything is," Aizawa countered bitterly. "Meaning is arbitrarily assigned by what we value, and you can't fucking change that. Especially not in this hero-worshipping garbage fire of a culture. Just like you can't change what you really want." "You must have worked very hard to pass the entry exam," Toshinori grasped for memories of the tournament, maybe what Aizawa had contributed to the commentary. But he had been so focused on Midoriya. He bit his lip and hedged his bets. "It's not very rational." Aizawa looked up at him strictly, gaze unfocused but nevertheless piercing. Toshinori coughed politely. Caught. Too smart for him, even shit-faced. "Still Aizawa-sensei." He would find out, later, little details about how some of the class was scared of him. The little ways they disavowed him, avoided him. How it taught him not to care. The buffer that the simple, swaggering presence of Hizashi gave him. And how deep their friendship really ran. Midnight and her care for him. Their intricate relationship of give and take that created an anchor of safety and sanity through the years of near-death experiences and trauma. But there, then, Aizawa just closed his eyes in the dark of Toshinori's bedroom, pushed out a thick, nauseated sigh. "All for a school that prides itself on beating the shit out of you. Yeah, perfect." Aizawa reached over and took Toshinori's hand, pulling it down towards his pants. Toshinori instantly leaned back, panicked at the sudden turn and entirely non-consenting to any sort of miserable blackout running. But Aizawa held firm. He tugged down the line of his pants with his other hand, and simply placed the older man's fingers flat against his hot skin. "When I say it hurt, I mean it." Toshinori looked closer, confused and still paralyzed by dread. It was in the dip of his hip, somewhere no one would see, visible in the light filtering in from the kitchen. Scars crisscrossing the skin, thin and malicious and scattered around concentrated bulges of shiny, fatty tissue, the kind that formed when cut upon cut, inestimable amount of times. "Did someone do this to you?" "Yeah, me," he said, releasing his hand. Toshinori drew it back, stunned, and watched as the younger hero just lay on his bed, clearly lost in thought. "I was a weird kid. I'd always messed around with pain, and how it tasted different depending on what was happening at the time. Well, once I got into the hero course, I started using it to take the edge off of feeling like I was drowning. And then it was like a game of rephrasing, reclaiming the pain of the day into something I could swallow. Or maybe a game of who could shout louder. I won." It slowly dawned on Toshinori. Aizawa had injured himself in school, before he learned to harness what his body could do, turn pain into something more, and do it safely. He used it as a coping method for mental pain and fear. A chill ripped down his spine. In the end, my body was the only kind of control I had. I could cut myself if I wanted, because it was mine to tear up. If this place was gonna hurt me, or even kill me, I'd just beat them to it. Nemuri found me, eventually. Nearly killed me herself. Said it wasn't safe. Aizawa smiled to himself sickly and lopsided. It wasn't. I should give her a little credit. She might have saved me from something. Who knows? She definitely did later. "Aizawa-kun," Toshinori said, pleading with him. For what, he didn't know. Aizawa shook his head. "The thing about Yue is, I got in on a technicality." "You didn't," Toshinori said immediately, firmly. "I looked at your file." "Creep," he murmured, then grunted, irritated. "I told you we make our realities. I was so serious about school, but I would never stop telling myself that I barely got into UA. That it was a fluke. That I had freaked out and hit a magic combination I'd never hit again. I barely had control on my capture weapon, and I never had the same relationship with my body as you have with yours. So I kept punishing mine for what I thought it couldn't do. Digging into it. Hating it like that would improve my chances. I knew my quirk would make me a hero, but only my body could keep me alive, and that was the hard part." Aizawa raised his hands and turned them, inspecting all the creases and scars in the low light. Toshinori followed his line of sight, breathless. "I take things away from people. That's my ability, plain and simple. Things they're accustomed to. Things they religiously define themselves by because they're short-sighted assholes who think they'll never go without." Aizawa mumbled, brow creased. "Unfortunately, the people left over after erasing were pretty pissed and could usually still kick my ass. Motivated to, even, because of how I'd exposed and humiliated them by yanking their proverbial crutches out from underneath and proving they could barely walk. Fuckheads." Toshinori could see how Aizawa wasn't popular in school, once his anger gained a foothold, sculpted by the derision and fear of his fellows. His was not a quirk that brought simple pride. "And your capture weapon?" "Not sure where that comes from. Think it skipped a generation. Some kind of levitation. It used to give me a headache until I stopped trying so hard." He snorted. "Not giving a fuck is usually the key to success for me. Huh. So, what did you do next in school?" Toshinori asked, desperate to know. "What changed?" "After Nemuri blew my cover, I doubled down, punished myself to the limit. Plus ultra style." he drawled with a bitter smirk, lip curling up over his teeth. Found an instructor who was willing to mentor me as well as beat the crap out of me. Got into talk therapy and quit cutting. Built up my body and learned how to use my reins. Toshinori wanted to say something, anything, to communicate how relieved he was that Aizawa had adapted and found a way out. But the words wouldn't come. On the bed, Aizawa kept going. That's why I train 3 times a week, every week, before class. To remind myself that I'm not my quirk and that I can't erase a situation. I have to fucking deal with it, rationally or physically. I hate people who hide in their quirks or don't accept that a basic grasp of body intelligence is necessary for being a functional hero. More is needed, both inside and outside this stupid pro system, for you to survive and thrive. Toshinori looked down at the floor, guilt and alarm twisting his insides. If anyone on Earth fit the definition of hiding in their quirk, it would be him. All for One was so much more, a burden and a legacy, but still, he had all but subsumed himself in the grief of it ebbing away, convinced it was taking his soul with it. His identity. Toshinori covered his mouth. No wonder Aizawa was so confrontational with him from the very beginning, trying to bully him into being something other than All Might. And then he heard it, as if from a distance. You are not that body, and that was never your power. Midoriya and the others need you like this. A hand touched his leg, warm. You need to take care of your body. This body. Aizawa whispered, suddenly talking to him. It's important. Aizawa-kun, Toshinori said, beyond touched. Sudden and fierce, the older hero wanted to zip the man into his sleeping bag and let him rest for an entire year. He deserved everything. Then, the soft name left his mouth like a prayer. Natural for the first time. Shota. You know, I haven't actually expelled 154 students, Aizawa added with a hiccup. You haven't? No, that would be insane, he said with a soft huff of air. Maybe a chuckle. Those records don't distinguish between motions to expel and actual expulsions, so don't hold me to that. Toshinori thought about it. It made a kind of sense, considering the amount of time he'd worked at UA, yet still cast him as the lead expulser on staff. How many students have you actually expelled, then? 39? 40 if Mineta doesn't get his shit together. My friend, that's still not great. I did it because they would have died, because I couldn't see them living through what I had, now or later. That sobered him. Aizawa's keen sense of reality was usually right on the mark. Discerning, rational, and too tired to indulge in simple sadism. The ones who were threatened with expulsion, they got serious. Cleaned up their act. Pushed themselves to the limit. Their limit. Not anybody else's limit. They fucking dealt and they succeeded. I'm proud of most of them. The ones I let go, it was only because they didn't have that grit in them and they never would. So I thought, they can die on somebody else's watch, he murmured, deep voice, thick with drink or emotion or both. Not mine. Not at this school. Just fucking kids. They're just kids. You have such a good heart, Aizawa-kun, Toshinori said at length, soft. His hands had long stilled on the younger hero's damp forehead. But then Aizawa nudged into him, snorting. I have a very low threshold for bullshit, he said flatly, eyes closed again. Then quieter, tenser. Which is why I can't talk to that kid. I can't. He's a failure waiting to happen, and I'd just be prolonging the cruelty. That quirk is all he has. And he's probably been living in it from day one, for better or worse. Imagine being in kindergarten and making your friends, classmates, parents do whatever you wanted with a word, probably not even knowing how it worked. Psychological scarring aside, this late in the game, it would be a fucking miracle if he managed to get his physical abilities to a point where he would be able to keep up with the other students, much less protect himself in a basic shootout. A miracle. Isn't that what heroes do? Toshinori ventured, quiet. Make miracles? No, we punch people who need punching. If you say so, the older hero said mildly, all wind gone from his sails long ago. I do, and I'm not going to fucking talk to him, unless it's to tell him that his shoe is untied. Aizawa mumbled, throwing his hands up without an ounce of coordination. Even then, I don't give a shit. Let him trip. It'll teach him about life. The next minute, Aizawa's hands flopped back down and he lay still on the bed. All opinions and ideas and fucks, as the slang went, clearly spent. In the surly silence, Toshinori sighed gently through his narrow nose and sat for a moment, before reaching out and gently brushing the hair from the younger hero's face again. Aizawa leaned into it, grunting peevishly, and he couldn't help but smile, sad as it was. "I'm sorry I pushed you," he began, sorrowful. He tried to synthesize it all, everything he'd learned and everything he'd done to insult him, and gave up halfway through. This wasn't about his apology. Instead, he said only what he knew to be true. I can see how that particular student would bring up difficult memories for you, and even make you doubt your place. I didn't have the slightest idea what I was saying or asking you to do. It was foolish of me. Of course you don't have to speak to him if you don't want to. I wish somebody had talked to me, Aizawa said after a minute, little more than a whisper in the dark. The crack of his heart was almost audible. The feeling split him so cleanly. Suddenly, Aizawa's arms snaked over Toshinori's legs and around his waist as he rolled over, cheeks scuffing his side. Sleep, he groaned with no comment or clarification. Was it a demand? A command? If it was a spell, it worked, because a faint snore filtered from the other hero's rat's nest hair with shocking immediacy, and Toshinori had to physically smother his laughter, an explosive product of all the tension of the week, and the pain of the man curled around him and his desperate desire to cope with it all. He whacked his chest as it tumbled over into coughing, then shook his head at the whole mess. Toshinori really did consider meddling to be a cornerstone of heroism, but he would take this entire misadventure back in a moment. After all, he hadn't done anything to help, just indirectly forced the man to spill his guts and relive traumatic experiences. It wasn't a good feeling, and he would have to apologize to Aizawa again when he was sober. The good man didn't deserve half of this trouble or pain, that was for certain, and Toshinori realized he didn't know him half as well as he really wanted to. Nonetheless, the older hero narrowed his focus to the here and now, and the snoring lump welded to his side. He couldn't really wrangle a way out of Aizawa's grip without waking him up, nor was he motivated to try. He was extremely tired, too. So Toshinori squirmed them both under the covers and lay back, still fully clothed in his dress shirt and slacks that now had drool on them. Though it was only early evening and his shuttered bedroom window still glowed with flat gray light of the spring storm, the exhaustion of the week caught up with him in the space of a moment. He gladly bedded down and fell asleep that way, curled awkwardly at the edge of his own bed, with the mighty, cold, rational, completely shit-faced hero eraser head tucked into his chest. This was an okay resolution, considering, but he still should have been prepared for a less than pleasant morning after. When Aizawa finally woke, a loose term to begin with, It was a half-hour process that ended up with him grimacing angrily into nothingness, eyes clenched shut. Toshinori patted at his shoulder. "Well, it finally happened," he said meekly. Aizawa, a human black storm cloud bundled into his coverlet, didn't move or acknowledge him, and after a moment he shrugged. "We finally slept together." He grinned, horribly nervous. Aizawa's eyes opened, then narrowed a fraction, and he shoved Toshinori in the chest, which wouldn't have been half as bad if the older man hadn't already been contorting to fit himself around his drunk co-worker the previous night. One shove was all it took, and Toshinori fell off the bed, exclaiming. Aizawa bolted up, hand out, then immediately collapsed back down onto the mattress, cursing floridly and clutching his head. And that was their encore, as sleeping together went. There was room for improvement. Things should have gone back to normal after that, and for the most part they did. The routine of talking and teaching returned, brightened with sleepy smirks and appraising glances that deftly calmed Toshinori's initial reactionary anxiety. There was something subtly different stirring in the younger hero, however, a kind of pensiveness that Toshinori was loath to ask after, perfectly happy to be back to basics and knowing his budget for personal inquiries with his fellow teacher was absolutely spent. A week later, however, he was lucky enough to be crossing the campus garden as All Might at the exact time to see Aizawa and Shinso Hitoshi seated on a shaded bench, deep in conversation. The young man was taken aback by the entire exchange, if his body language was anything to judge by. His hands gripped his bare arms, forming a barricade across his chest, and the look in his shadowed eyes bordered on terrified. He had obviously been convinced to sit down, and Aizawa kept his eyes on the ground as he spoke, strong, scarred hands gesturing sparingly. Toshinori wondered how hard Aizawa must be trying to keep any semblance of conversation going between two such quiet people. Then, as if drawn by the gravity of his muscled form, the young man looked up. Their eyes met across the garden, and All Might grinned with everything he had, flashing him a thumbs up. Young Shinso's drawn face lit up, one part disbelief and one part hope. His hands dropped from his arms. Everything from his posture to his expression simply opened, and it was incredible to see. Beside him, Aizawa looked between them, and his lips twitched. He nodded, a bare incline of his head somehow meant for Toshinori. Then All Might strode on to class, barrel chest thrumming with the brightest of feelings, more eager than ever for tomorrow and all it would bring, while marveling at all that day had already brought him. No one could help what they longed for, true. Perhaps teaching, then, had a great deal to do with helping with those longings, finding a way to make them achievable or simply putting them into context. Often that context was pain and fear, but you could, Toshinori realized, heal the hurt that you had gone through and teach others how to heal theirs by letting them trace your scars. It took facing down the exposure, the pain and shame of reliving that pain, to help another, and perhaps realize in the process that you'd only done the best you could for yourself at the time. You try to strip away the shame, promise something better on the other side, even with the taste of blood on your tongue. Toshinori knew it was a tall order. Only the bravest could be true teachers, and true teachers were, at their core, healers of the highest order, correcting painful lessons we were never aware we learned, and asking us what we truly want from life. True teachers saw more than they ever said and did more than anyone ever knew. True teachers never gave up, and yet gave relentlessly of themselves, transforming personal pain into tools for the young to use to get themselves out of dark places. Aizawa was a truly extraordinary teacher. That much was fact. And Toshinori realized he might have the most to learn from him, given time. Shinzo was a lucky boy. They were lucky in many ways, he thought, with dual grief and wonder. To have Aizawa at all.